You're listening to an African Elements top news story for April 8th, 2026. Please visit our website at africanelements.org for more daily news. Why do redlined maps still shape black diabetes rates today? A significant report from the University at Buffalo released on April 8th, 2026 provides a clear look at health inequality. This research shows that historic redlining continues to impact the health of black communities in the current year. Researchers examined over 15,000 census tracts to find these results. The data confirms that neighborhood environments created by old biases still dictate who gets sick today. This study comes at a time when the administration of President Donald Trump faces questions about urban health funding and racial equity. The findings suggest that the high rate of diabetes in African American neighborhoods is not a coincidence. It is the result of decades of systemic neglect. Historic maps from nearly a century ago still predict which areas will have the highest levels of metabolic disease. These maps do more than show where people live. They show how policy decisions from the past act as a death sentence for many in the present. Understanding this history is essential to solving the modern crisis of diabetes in the diaspora. The story of modern health disparities began during the Great Depression. In 1933, the federal government created the Homeowners Loan Corporation. This agency wanted to save the housing market from collapse. To do this, they created residential security maps for hundreds of American cities. These maps used a color-coded system to tell banks which neighborhoods were safe for investment. This system was built on racial prejudice rather than financial reality. Areas marked in green or grade A were considered the best places to provide loans. These were almost always white suburban neighborhoods. Areas marked in red or grade D were labeled as hazardous. These neighborhoods were primarily home to black residents and recent immigrants. Banks used these maps to deny mortgages to families in red zones. This practice effectively locked black families out of the primary way Americans build wealth. The consequences of these decisions lasted long after the HOLC disappeared. The exclusion of black families from fair housing created a legacy of poverty. This happened even as systems established shortly after the Civil War ended were supposed to provide freedom. Without the ability to own homes or get loans, these communities could not invest in their own infrastructure. This lack of investment led to fewer grocery stores and lower quality schools. Today, the maps may be old, but the boundaries they drew remain visible in the health of those who live there. The 2026 University at Buffalo study does more than look at old maps. It introduces a tool called the Structural Racism Effect Index. This index measures how current systems still disadvantage black neighborhoods. The SREI tracks 9 different areas, including housing stability, education, and the criminal justice system. By using this data, researchers can see how structural racism continues to function in real time. It moves the conversation away from individual choices to systemic failures. The index shows that areas once redlined are now the most likely to have high SREI scores. These neighborhoods face a combination of low income, poor transportation, and a lack of healthcare facilities. The research found that historic redlining is the strongest predictor of high structural racism today. This connection creates a ripple effect. When a community lacks wealth, it also lacks the power to demand better environmental protections or healthy food options. The SREI helps scientists quantify this ongoing struggle. The data revealed that high SREI scores correlate directly with metabolic stress. People living in areas with high levels of systemic bias experience constant challenges to their health. This situation is particularly difficult for families facing the historical challenges of the family structure under economic pressure. When housing is unstable and employment is scarce, the body remains in a state of high alert. This physiological state is a primary driver of the diabetes epidemic currently seen in these census tracts. Dr. Leonard Eeegeed led the University at Buffalo research team. They used a method called structural equation modeling to analyze the data. This technique allowed them to separate the effects of race from the effects of the environment. The study concluded that race itself is not the cause of high diabetes rates. Instead, the environment created by structural racism is the true culprit. This is a vital distinction because it stops people from blaming biology for a social problem. The findings showed that African Americans living in grade D areas have a much higher prevalence of diabetes than those in grade A areas. Specifically, the diabetes prevalence in redline tracts is roughly 11.8%. This is significantly higher than in neighborhoods that were rated favorably in the 1930s. The research also found that years of life lost due to diabetes were 66.5% higher in redlined areas. These numbers paint a grim picture of the physical toll taken by historical discrimination. Environmental factors in these neighborhoods create a pathway to disease. For example, redline districts are often food swamps. These are areas filled with fast food and liquor stores, but very few grocery stores with fresh produce. When people have few healthy options, their metabolic health suffers. This lack of access is a direct result of retail redlining. Businesses often avoid investing in black neighborhoods because of the low property values established decades ago. Another shocking finding involves the physical temperature of neighborhoods. Historically, redlined areas are often much hotter than other parts of the same city. These areas are called heat islands. They have more pavement and fewer trees or parks. Research indicates that redlined neighborhoods can be up to 13 degrees hotter during the summer. This heat is more than an inconvenience. It is a metabolic stressor that can worsen existing health conditions. The absence of green space makes it difficult for residents to exercise safely. When parks are unavailable or poorly maintained, people are less likely to be active. This contributes to weight gain and insulin resistance. Furthermore, heat islands often have higher levels of air pollution. Particulate matter from nearby industrial zones or highways contributes to inflammation in the body. This inflammation is a key factor in the development of type 2 diabetes among residents of the diaspora. Structural racism also dictates where environmental hazards are located. Industrial plants and waste facilities are frequently placed in or near formerly redlined districts. This exposure to toxins further damages metabolic health. This situation highlights the importance of education within the community regarding environmental justice. Residents must understand that their health environment is often a result of zoning laws that targeted their neighborhoods for destruction. Living in a neighborhood shaped by structural racism creates a high allostatic load. This term refers to the wear and tear on the body caused by chronic stress. When a person faces constant worries about crime, police surveillance, or financial instability, their body stays in fight or flight mode. This leads to a permanent elevation of cortisol. Cortisol is a hormone that tells the liver to release sugar into the bloodstream for energy. Over time, these high blood sugar levels force the pancreas to work harder. Eventually, the body's cells become resistant to insulin. This is how environmental stress literally turns into a biological disease. The Buffalo study found that this stress is a major reason why Black Americans experience weathering. Weathering is the process where the body ages faster because of the constant struggle against systemic racism. It explains why a 40-year-old in a redline tract might have the health profile of a much older person. The impact of this stress is not limited to physical health. It also affects mental well-being and community cohesion. When a neighborhood is under-resourced, the social fabric can begin to fray. High rates of incarceration and unemployment create a cycle of instability. This environment makes it nearly impossible to maintain the metabolic balance required for good health. The biological response to this stress is a rational reaction to an irrational environment. Intergenerational wealth is one of the strongest predictors of long-term health. Homeownership allows families to build equity that can be used for emergencies or education. Because redlining prevented Black families from buying homes in the 1930s, their descendants often lack this financial safety net. This wealth gap means that Black families have fewer resources to combat the health risks in their environment. They cannot easily move to a grade A area or afford expensive organic food. Wealth acts as a buffer against allostatic load. When a family has savings, An unexpected medical bill or a job loss is less likely to trigger a chronic stress response. Without that buffer, every financial setback becomes a biological threat. The Buffalo study notes that intergenerational poverty, rooted in redlining, is a direct pathway to diabetes. This shows that the economy and the healthcare system are deeply connected. You cannot fix one without addressing the other. Even when income levels are similar, the lack of inherited wealth remains a problem. Black families often carry more debt and have fewer assets than white families with the same salary. This financial pressure contributes to higher blood pressure and blood sugar levels. It also limits residential mobility. Many people remain in hazardous neighborhoods not because they want to, but because they lack the capital to leave. This reality is a direct echo of the 1933 maps. The findings from 2026 suggest that current medical approaches are not enough. Simply telling people to eat better or exercise more does not work when the environment prevents those choices. Instead, policymakers must focus on structural interventions. This means changing the laws and environments that cause disease in the first place. Examples include zoning reforms to remove industrial plants from residential areas and investing in community land trusts. There is also a need for economic reparations or grants to bring healthy resources into food swamps. Providing low-interest loans for Black-owned grocery stores could transform the health of a neighborhood. Additionally, increasing green space and planting trees in formerly redlined areas can reduce the heat island effect. These changes are more effective than individual medical treatments because they address the root cause of the problem. They help to heal the environment so the people can heal themselves. Addressing the wealth gap is also a public health necessity. Policies like baby bonds or universal basic income could provide the financial stability needed to reduce allostatic load. When families are not constantly worried about survival, their bodies can begin to recover from metabolic stress. The University at Buffalo study serves as a smoking gun. It proves that the diabetes epidemic is a policy choice. By changing those policies, the community can finally begin to dismantle the biological legacy of redlining. Copyright, African Elements.